Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, the totally self-explanatory title of our show.
That's right.
Yes. There is a different way to word that to make it sound intelligible, but we're going to move
on. Can I make an interesting story about being fat and watching movies is I had to drive up to Cleveland to go see a movie this week, and I was so tired.
You had to buy two seats in the car?
I did. It was a long night because I had to get up early and drive up there, and then I was there all day, and I came home and I was exhausted. So I tweeted out that I'm going to sit on my couch and I'm not going to get up until noon tomorrow. And it was like 6 o'clock in the evening when I said
right.
this. And the next morning, my wife wakes up and she comes up and here I am lying on the couch and I'm asleep and I'm checking my phone, checking email on the phone. She's like, "Well, you can't get up for another 15 minutes." And I'm like, "Why?" She goes, "Well, you tweeted out last night that you were going to get up."
You know, you really, you're not helping the rest of us. You know,
what?
Some fat people can live normal lives. Not all fat people are lazy.
Yeah, but it's more fun that way.
I guess.
I don't know if I'd call myself lazy. I was very lazy today, but I'm not going to go into detail of why I was so lazy.
I tell you. Anyways, let's focus on the other half of our title of our show, which is At the Movies.
Which we can't just call it that because there's a certain trademark issue.
Right, of a show that now no longer exists. Anyway, we're going to talk about some movies this week. I'm assuming we're going to talk about The Karate Kid and The A-Team, even though my notes say Killers, Marmaduke, Get Into the Greek, and Splice.
Wow, did I send you the wrong show notes?
You might have, but that's irrelevant at this point because we're moving on to how you can get a hold of Fat Guys at the Movies. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com, you can go to iTunes, and you can search for Fat Guys of the Movies. You can download, you can subscribe and review and all these fun things. You can email us, fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735. You can get us on Facebook and Twitter. Really, if you need to know that information, just go back to one of our old shows. It's funny, because we tell you how to find us, but you've already found us.
Yes.
Which I, you know,
you're obviously listening to the show.
So what I want you to do is I want you to take this information that I just gave you, dear listener, and tell it to about 100 friends.
Put it on a sandwich board and walk down the street.
Right. If you tell 100 people, that means we'll have 300 total listeners by next week.
In fact, what I want people to do is I want people to take this and print your own tracks. So, and go to a college campus or an airport, start handing it out.
Uh-huh.
And when people start to punch you in the face because they think you're being obnoxious with witnessing to them, they're going to realize you're just talking about Fat Guys at the Movies, and they won't punch you in the face.
I see.
So this is a great way to not get punched in the face.
I see.
It's a plan. Mm-hmm. It's in progress.
Okay. So what's our first film?
I'll give you a can you name it in three notes? Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. This is what we do on the show. We sing crappy TV shows.
Oh, no, they get it. I'm sure they get it at this point.
Yes. This is the A-Team. Four Army Rangers are framed for a crime they didn't commit, then blow a lot of things up trying to clear their names.
1 year ago, Commando unit was sent to prison for a crime they didn't commit. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers for hire.
This is beyond nuts, boss. It gets better.
Now we're talking.
I love it when a plan comes together.
First of all, before we review this, did you watch the show? Did you ever watch the A-Team TV show?
Not in any significant way that I could recollect. Not as an adult, I guess. I mean, I caught a couple when I was a kid, but...
Well, it was on reruns, because you were not a kid when it was... You were, like, born.
Yeah, I mean, I caught a couple reruns, but... Yeah.
Yeah. My mom wouldn't let me watch it. She thought it was too violent, which is really ridiculous to say, because it being too violent, no one ever got killed on the show.
Right.
I mean, they like cars would fly over cliffs and blow up, and then people come walking out, shaking their head, going, "Oh, I got a headache."
People do get killed in the movie, though.
In the movie, they really get killed.
Lots of people get killed. It offended Mr. T.
I know it did, and he talked about there being a lot of sex, and I don't know what movie he saw.
There was no sex in that movie at all.
There was a little bit of a smooching between Face and Jessica Biel, and that's about it.
Right, and I've seen Jessica Biel do more than that.
Yeah. What did you think of the movie?
I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. It's one of those movies that is a very fast, glossy action movie and has some really, for lack of a better word, hokey CGI effects.
Yeah.
But it's one of those movies that it never asks you to suspend disbelief. You just do.
You're just like, it's
just,
like, whatever.
You have no choice but to go with it because it's so ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun. And I tell you what, I've watched a little bit of the A-Team show, and what's important about adapting it to the movie is not necessarily like a lot of the details and stuff like that, but it feels like they get the spirit of the characters right.
Oh, they totally nailed
the
characters. The
characters are memorable. When you walk away from the movie, you know, Charlton Copley, who everybody remembers from District 9, plays Mad Murdock. He is worth the price of admission for this movie alone. He is so entertaining.
He's brilliant. And what's funny is to say that Murdock's your favorite is like saying Curly's your favorite stooge.
Right.
You know, because I remember when I was a kid. But, you know, the thing is, they're all great. Because I remember as a kid with the A-Team, everyone was like, well, everyone loved Murdock because he was funny. Mm-hmm. But they also liked Hannibal because he was cool, and they liked Mr. T because he was Mr. T, and they didn't want to get punched.
A pity to fool.
I mean, Dirk Benedict was just sort of like the glue that held everybody together, I guess.
Mm.
But I mean, the same thing with this one. I thought they nailed the characters perfectly. They did a great update of the characters, and I mean, even to the point where they're making jokes, because I was watching some of the old episodes on Netflix, because they're all available on Netflix Instant.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching some of the old episodes, and the whole thing with BA having a fear of flying and getting all upset, because somebody actually tweeted out to me asking that, tweeted out and say, hey, does anyone, did he have a fear of flying? And I'm like, oh yeah, they did. They drug him before they got him on a plane.
Right.
So, I mean, I thought it was really well done. And then, of course, the action was just fun and stupid and explosive. I mean, there's some pacing issues.
Yeah, well, and it takes a serious turn here and there to try and further the story. But I love that they accomplish a lot very quickly in the film, especially where they tell kind of the origin of the team, and they do it in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, and then they just exist. And that's
it's
really
relatively,
kind of fun.
It's relatively accurate. Of course, in the movie, the TV show is the Vietnam.
Right.
Was their background. But, I mean, they had sort of the same thing where they were accused of knocking over the Bank of Hanoi and that sort of thing.
Right.
But, yeah, they give you all the backstory. Like, the first 30, 40 minutes is leading up to the credits of the opening of the TV show. It gives you all the backstory to it.
Cool. Well, we'll talk more about this when we come back, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the official term is, what's your official grade? I'm saying it rocks.
Yeah, I'm saying it rocks as well.
Yeah, so, but yeah, we got to go to a break. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the A-Team and then move on to talk about the nepotism kid. I'm sorry, the Karate Kid.
Kung Fu. And we have returned.
Bum, bum, bum.
I now have the correct notes for this show, so we're in good shape.
We're out of sorts. We're a
I know
bit disorganized.
When the segment's supposed to end now. Anyway, so we'll continue our little chat. You said what? Rocks?
I said totally rocks.
I said rocks as well. It's a very fun movie, and like I said, there's a lot of charisma going on, and I really, really enjoyed Charlton Copley in this movie. It just shows an incredible amount of range that this guy has. Not bad for not really being an actor before showing up in District 9. And I think Bradley Cooper is great. Liam Neeson, I mean, that guy could do just about anything.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I was very impressed with Quentin Rampage Jackson.
Yeah, usually when somebody has a nickname Rampage and they come from a fighting background, you don't expect any decent acting from them.
Well, and what's interesting is that, is, you know, not to knock Mr. T, but Mr. T was always kind of a joke, kind of a, I don't know, he was kind of a funny version. He was almost a parody of himself.
He was a shtick. That's totally.
Yeah, there was a shtick to it. And I feel like there's almost a sense of naturalism or realism to B.A. Baracus with Quentin Rampage Jackson. Like, you almost feel like he's a real person, whereas Mr. T was always like this parody of this, like, badass dude.
Well, it was a silliness. I mean, even if you watch the shows, I mean, you're like, wait, you're wearing feathers, character. And you got these bling, and you got those goofy socks
on. Right, so I think I like that. You know, I like that a lot more than say the Mr. T version, and not to take anything away from that, but that's it. This movie felt like it kind of fit in the real world. Some stuff happens in this movie you see him in the trailer. They fly a tank, of sorts. But you know, beyond that, the characters felt a little bit more natural, and I think that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And then of course a lot of stuff blows up, and I thought the action was impressive, especially Joe Carnahan, who has done some impressive action before with Smokin' Aces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This was definitely a lot bigger than anything we've seen from him before, and I think he handled it pretty well.
I would say this about Joe Carnahan, who actually has a little cameo in the movie. And he wrote it with Brian Bloom.
He has
two
cameos.
Well, his name has a cameo in there, too.
Well, yeah, one of the generals.
But there's a whole... if you look at, like, Smokin' Aces, and you take any of the scenes, bits and pieces of Smokin' Aces work really well. They don't quite hold together completely, but you kind of forgive it for just kind of how fun the movie was. And that's sort of the way it is with the A-Team. I mean, at any point in the movie, you're just like, yeah, this all doesn't quite fit together. It does kind of feel a little bit like it's clunky, but you kind of forgive it, especially when you get to the big, you know, finale action sequence.
Right.
I forgave a lot with that.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, they build that, and I think that's one of the things a lot of people have asked me this week about whether or not this is better than The Losers. And the difference is that
The Losers took itself more seriously.
The Losers, well, it took itself more seriously, but it also played very fast and loose with its story in the first half of the movie, and it never earned the right to be a little over the top. So when you got to that end, and when you really got to kind of get into Jason Patrick's character, the villain, it didn't fit at all.
Yeah.
And I think with the A-Team, you have this slow kind of burn build of kind of absurdity, and it really does earn the right to have just this ridiculous final scene.
Well, and the other thing I'll say about this is there's a lot of excitement from people I know, being somebody who grew up in the 80s. There's a lot of people I know who are of my age who are very excited to see this movie. I don't think there was no excitement to see The Losers because few people read the comics.
Well, that's true, yeah.
And it's going to serve this movie well simply because I think they capture the essence of the show. Yes, there's more violence. Yes, it's a grittier, harder version. But it's still, everything that made the show great is what makes the movie fun.
Right.
So, all right, let's move on to the next one. We both said rocks. The next one is The Karate Kid, in which Jaden Smith uses his box office power of his dad to remake a classic 80s coming-of-age movie in China about kung fu and not karate.
Gonna do something? I just wanna go home. This is home.
I thought you were just a maintenance man.
The only way to stop them is to face them.
I will teach you real kung fu.
Kung fu, you've seen how we put on the jacket.
Be strong. Take off the jacket.
Everything is kung fu.
All right, you didn't see this, right?
You must learn kung fu.
Well, I'm going to harp on that, first of all.
Are you calling the big BS on this movie?
I am calling shenanigans on the name alone because they literally told everybody as they were making it, they told Jackie Chan it's going to be the Kung Fu Kid. And they said, oh, well, no, we're just going to release it in the United States as Karate Kid. They're only releasing it in like China and Korea and Japan as the Kung Fu Kid. Because if you release it, because it's called The Karate Kid, and then they make a big point, and they're like, it's not karate, it's kung fu, because karate's from Okinawa, which is Japanese, and Kung Fu is from China. Just call it the Kung Fu Kid. I mean, is there going to be anyone who's going to be like, I'm not going to see it because it's not called the Karate Kid? Is everyone not going to know that it's a remake? So
yeah,
I'm calling
shenanigans
on the title.
And that's not the first time this has happened. What was the other movie that was like totally remake in name only?
Troll 2.
Well, besides Troll 2, had like nothing to do with the original movie.
Well, no, actually, this one, I will say this. I went back and I watched the original The Karate Kid, which I loved. I was 13 when it came out, and it was a fantastic movie. It totally holds up today. I mean, I just rewatched it literally this morning, and
right.
Totally holds
literally.
Up. Literally. And what's so, it's and they hit a lot of the same points. They do, it is a remake, but they have him going to China. The problem is, Jaden Smith has nothing on Ralph Macchio. I'm not knocking Jaden Smith because the kid's a cute kid and he's an okay actor, but there's no excuse for him to be headlining a movie aside from the fact that his dad is Will Smith and producing the damn thing.
Yeah.
And let me just paint the picture. Literally the movie opens with, it starts, it shows him getting ready to move, which is the original movie is him moving, and he's sitting here, he's looking at the door jamb where you see how tall you are, and you're like, oh, this is how he age 3,
right.
When he took his first steps, this is when he went to kindergarten, this is when he had his first, and then it's like, this date daddy died. That is the melodrama of the movie right there. And I like rolled my eyes at it. Now the other problem, the movie's 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
And that's way too long. There was a critic who said to me when I was at the screen, he's like, oh, the first one. I'm like, no, it's not. The first one was just over 2 hours. It was like 2 hours and 6 minutes or so. This one's 2 hours and 20 minutes. It is a long plotting movie. And I can guarantee you the guy who directed it is a guy named Harald Schwarz or something like that. I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's like, I think from the Netherlands. It's the guy who did Pink Panther 2 and One Night at McCool's and Agent Cody Banks. He clearly got the job because Will Smith's like, let's have this guy direct it because he'll do whatever I tell him to.
Right.
And there are scenes that are competently directed, but you can tell there's a... I went and watching this, knowing it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, going, there's got to be stuff they could cut out. And I'm like, yeah, they could have cut that out and that out and that out. But I guarantee you that Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith go in the editing booth and go, oh, no, he's doing such a good job. We need to keep that scene in.
Right.
And Jaden Smith, he does an acting job on the par with his acting in The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was okay.
Right.
But it's sort of like they gave him a stack of DVDs. They said, okay, here's Independence Day and Wild Wild West and Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2. Act like your dad. Because
So what you're saying is that he just doesn't have that star quality, like that magnetism that Will Smith has.
He may, but he doesn't have it at 12. I'm sorry. He seems like he's just playing his dad.
I will say this, and this is something I was curious about when I saw the trailers. I haven't seen the movie because there was a hockey game on. Congratulations, Chicago Blackhawks, Stanley Cup champions. Anyways, does he get the physical part of the role well? Because I always felt like that was the one really great thing about Ralph Macchio was you believe that he was kind of a at the beginning he was just kind of a adulty kid, just a regular kid who was not physically, you know, anything
Ralph
special.
Macchio,
and then by the end,
strong,
you can tell that he gets the karate, but he's still not like this incredible physical specimen. And I felt like Jaden Smith in the trailers looked like, I mean, he looked pretty agile.
I don't know. He's tiny. That's the other thing. I think they went too young with the character. This is the thing. The movie, the original was like made for a 16-year-old. Now, granted, Ralph Macchio was like 25 when he made it, but the character was 16. This kid's just too young. It is so clear that they just said, Will Smith's like, I want to make The Karate Kid with my son. Boom. Kablam! And that's what he did. And it's unnecessary. It's overly long. The villain's better in the original. The plot's better than the original. Miyagi's better in the original. Ralph Macchio's better. Everything about the movie is better done in the original. You know.
Okay.
So I'm
guessing your grade is...
I'm going to say suck.
All right. And we'll be back.
hard road. 33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground. Crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We're actually, Neil and I were talking during the break, and we're having a really in-depth discussion, which is completely out of sorts for Fat Guys at the Movies.
I know, we usually, I mean, but this is, it actually isn't that rare, because that's usually where we have those kind of conversations, in between segments.
Yeah, we talk about, intelligently talk about movies, and then we come back and like are like, hey, farts, you know, or something like that.
Anyway.
But we demanded, but Neil demanded, he put his foot down and demanded that we start recording because we were having an interesting discussion about
remakes.
Remakes. And I was just making the point that this just seems so forced as Jaden Smith that they've maybe waited 4 years, three, 4 years,
right,
and did it when he was older because the whole love story doesn't make sense at 12.
Right.
The, you know, the kids beating the crap out of each other. It's kind of uncomfortable to watch kids that young beating the crap out of each other as opposed to teenagers, you know, like high school kids beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, it's Jaden Smith has had two movies under his belt. He played Will Smith's son in Pursuit of Happiness, and then he played Jennifer Connelly's stepson in Did 80 Years Stood Still, another of which he sort of wowed. He just sort of was there. There were small parts.
Right.
He doesn't deserve a vehicle at this point.
Right.
But you had a comment to make about remakes.
Well, and I think from what it sounds like, you know, and obviously I haven't seen the old film yet, but I have a great deal of love for the original Karate Kid, and there's a lot of reasons why that movie works. And there's a spirit there, you know. You believe that Daniel is a real kind of person, and learns a lot of lessons along the way, and becomes a completely different person by the end in a good way. And I think one of the things we're experiencing with remakes, and you mentioned Clash of the Titans, and it seems to me like there are two kinds of people that remake films.
Yeah.
And this is where the dichotomy of quality comes in. There is the kind of filmmaker or filmmaking team or creative team that remake a film because they love the spirit of that movie. Yeah. And there's another kind that just do it just because they want to, you know, have something
this
marketable.
This movie made money in the 80s, let's do it again.
And it's almost like that kind of person, the ones who just want to make, you know, who have essentially run out of ideas and need something, they make it, and it feels like a movie that someone who just watched the original made, instead of understanding the spirit of that movie. And I think Clash of Titans is a perfect example, because there are details in Clash of the Titans that are nods to the original. And the Bubo scene, the Bubo the Owl scene, is the perfect example of this, because you have, it's in there. It's something from the original movie that people recognize, love, you know, a special place in their heart for that one character. It's in there, but there's nothing to it. There's no substance to the appearance, and it's not loving. It's just like, well, it's there. You know, well, hey, we got it in there. Check that off the list. And it feels, from what you're saying, it sounds like the Karate Kid is kind of like that as well, where, you know, you have the jacket thing where he makes him take off and put back on the jacket, which is similar
for like
to
8 days in a row.
Right, which is similar to Mr. Miyagi's like wax on, wax off, do all these chores thing, but it's almost like they put it in there to check it off of a list of things that needed to be in there, as opposed to understanding why it worked in the original movie. So I think it's a matter of spirit, and this is very similar thing we're talking about with the A-Team, where a lot of the things are in there, but it's more that the writers, the director, all the people involved understood why they needed to be in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think there's a forced nature to the Karate Kid that it just, I don't know, it's so unnecessary. And the other thing I don't like about it, I'm harping on Jaden Smith, and I really don't take an issue with him.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's his
fault.
It sounds like somebody thrust him in. He's too young for the role. You know,
I have a bigger problem with Will Smith, basically, you know, saying, "Well, I'm going to use my power," and I get that as a dad wanting to do something great for your kid. But do we really need to spend $40 million and you know, waste 2.5 hours on screen to do this? But the character, And I said this to another critic as I was walking out. We were talking about it. And I said, well, the other thing I didn't like, he was such a punk. He's this punk kid. He's got these crappy little cornrows, which I think makes him look really stupid. He's
You're so
got,
cultured.
Okay, I'm sorry. Cornrows, you can put anybody in cornrows and it looks really bad. I'm sorry, I don't care who it is. It's like a mullet. But the thing is, the character, the kid has this attitude through the whole damn movie, and he's like, mom, blah, 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 he's like complaining to his mom, and he's talking smack to Mr. Han, which is the Miyagi character. And he's a little ass, is what he is. He's a little ass.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Daniel in the original, because somebody said, well, he was a kid from New Jersey and he's had this attitude. I'm like, well, he had the New Jersey attitude, but he was a sweet kid. He was a nice guy. He didn't take lip. And it was only after Miyagi makes him wax his cars and paint the house and paint the fence and sand the deck for like a week straight that Daniel finally is like, look, man, you're not doing anything. And then he's like, oh, no, I do this. It made more sense, and Ralph Macchio really brought a humanity to that role. And there's a scene in the original. It's when it's one of the times he gets beaten up. He gets pushed down the hill on his bike, and he's wheeling his bike back to the apartment. And he's I hate this bike. I hate this town. Bobby. And he's going, and there, you really feel for this character. I mean, he really captures this essence of
right.
You're like, I feel so bad for him. When I was a teenager, I saw it, and I'm like, I totally relate to it. And I watch this, and he's like, well, I'm in China, and I can't speak Chinese, and no one likes me, and everyone's beating me up. I'm like, well, that's because you're a punk, and you're taking attitude, and you're not learning to speak Chinese, you idiot. You're moving to China. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I don't blame Jaden Smith, but he's a big problem in the movie.
Interesting. Interesting. Well,
I don't like cornrows.
Fair enough. I don't like mullets either. But I think you're onto something with talking about his age and the age difference between not only the actor behind the role but the character. You know, it's not easy to watch kids beating up other kids. You know, and I think
even the scene where when Han reveals that he knows Kung Fu. Whereas, like, Miyagi, there's a scene in the original where Daniel's getting beaten up by the kids after the Halloween party,
mm-hmm.
and Miyagi jumps in and beats up the kids. Well, these guys are towering over, you know, Pat Morita.
Right.
And so you're like, wow, this old dude's beating the snot
this
out of
little
these kids.
Old dude, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're watching this, and it's like these 12-year-olds, and so they're like, well, wait, Jackie Chan's kind of beating the snot out of 12-year-olds? That's kind of...
Right.
Yeah, I know they're the bad guys, and you never get the sense that he's being mean about it, but you're like... It just the age difference is too much.
Interesting. Cool. All right. Well, let's talk box office. What do you think these? Yes. I would assume that one of these two movies is going to beat Shrek, and
I hope to God that the A-Team wins, but I have this sinking suspicion that Karate Kid's going to do well.
I really feel like Karate Kid's going to win the weekend.
Yeah.
I feel there's a lot of marketing going into it. There's there's an audience out there for it. Although, interestingly enough, the movie's long. I mean, it's...
That, I think, is going to be the hardest thing.
That'll be the only thing that, you know, prevents it from being a big hit. It'll be a decent-sized opener. I think the A-Team will open solid $20, $25 million. Nothing insane. Although, I would love to see the A-Team make a lot of money. I think it's kind of one of those... It's probably... Aside from Iron Man 2, it's probably it's easily the best action movie I've seen this year so far.
Yeah.
And that seems to be in short supply this summer, so if you're going to go out and see an action movie this summer, go see it this weekend.
Go take your chance.
But I feel like The Karate Kid crosses a lot of demographics.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's kind of a family movie. It's, you know, people of all backgrounds.
I can't judge
it.
You know as well as I do, you can't judge the success of a movie by how well it does in the test screening.
Right.
Because you got these people bringing, you know, families bringing in five kids, and they love it, but I'm like, would they love it if they spent full price and paid for everybody to go see this?
Right.
So,
I think Karate Kid will have a good opening weekend. I don't think it's going to have much legs beyond that.
Yeah.
But I think it'll open well. I think it'll open, you know, $40 million.
Yeah, and the movie only costs $35 million, so it's probably going to be... I mean, no matter what, it's going to make money.
Yeah.
when all's said and done.
Yeah. Well, you got to give Will Smith that credit. He did make it cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was surprising because, well, and there's this whole section in the middle. Like I said, they go to this Shaolin temple, and I'm like, they could totally cut that out. But that's where all the production value is. Like, you got all these awesome shots of China. They do shit on the Great Wall and stuff like that, which is, I don't think, anywhere near Beijing.
Yeah.
I don't know my Chinese geography. But, I mean, it would make no sense.
I don't think it's anywhere near the... I don't think the wall in Shanghai... Is it in Shanghai or Beijing?
It's in Beijing. You know, because they, like, are outside Olympic Village. But the whole point of the wall was to keep the Huns out. And you don't build the wall right next to your capital city.
Yeah, no, it's out in the country, I'm pretty sure.
It's the middle of nowhere. So, yeah.
I don't know. China's a huge country.
Yeah, it's...
That's like saying, is the Empire State Building near Idaho?
Like, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, I guess from a galactic perspective.
Like, does the Mississippi River protect New York?
Yeah.
Anyway. So no, I think we're in agreement. Karate Kid, number one. A-Team, probably number two. Shrek, number three.
I wouldn't be surprised if they both did, you know, sort of 30 to 40 million range. I'd love to see the A-Team do better.
They're big, wide releases, so.
I wished Karate Kid would not do well because the whole... They kind of trample on the spirit of what
exactly. It's the spirit. So, it's the spirit that matters. Anyway, so we've got a Fat Guy 5 this week. We didn't have one last week. And Jeff Hall, one of our few actual regular listeners, was outraged that we didn't do one. So
was he outraged?
I mean, there was a comment on Film School Rejects where he displayed some outrage. There's no way to convey sarcasm or "Hey, I'm joking" over the internet in comments, as we've learned over the years.
Well, Jeff did express outrage when I had Fozzie on that we actually had an intellectual discussion about movies.
Oh, he's really gonna be mad this week because we just dude episode. That whole remakes discussion, that is certified gold. 170 episodes. That's some of the best stuff we've ever done. Moving on to the Fat Guy 5.
This is dedicated to Jeff Hall.
Yes. And in honor of the A-Team being released and several other 80s things happening.
Well, both from 1984, because the A-Team was 83, 84 was its first season, and Karate Kid came out.
So we have five 80s television shows that should be made into movies, we think.
Yeah, this is ours. Yeah. It's our suggestions, Hollywood. You can give us money later.
Okay. All right. Go. What's the first one?
First one is Scarecrow and Mrs. King. You made a comment to me that you have no idea what that is.
Still don't have any idea.
Bruce Boxleitner plays a CIA agent, and he ends
the guy
up
from Tron.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. This was actually what he was known for. Before like Babylon 5. But he plays a CIA agent who sort of gets mixed up with this housewife just in this. And it's sort of like him calling upon the housewife to help him out in these situations. So she kind of becomes a kind of a spy, de facto spy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really this sort of this mix of, you know, sort of that espionage and homemaker. It's a cute little show. Kate Jackson, actually way hotter than she was in Charlie's Angels, plays Mrs. King, Amanda King. It's a cute show. Just came out on DVD the first season a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It would be... I totally could see this done with, like, Drew Barrymore and Bradley Cooper. This would make... Mm-hmm. I mean, you could totally make this into an awesome...
So it's
awesome,
kind of like a True Lies, the TV show, without all the James Cameron-ness.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Yeah. So that's mine.
Fair enough. My first one is Elf. Because it's one of the few television shows I actually remember from the 1980s.
You're like on the list. You're like, what about this one? I'm like, well, that kind of started in 1989 and went through 1998.
Yeah,
so that's really more of a 90s show.
Yeah, I was born in the mid 80s, I guess. Well, no, I was born in 83, so
that's early,
but still, you know, I missed 3 years and then probably another five.
But
being
Alf
young.
Alf is certified 80s.
Alf is certified 80s. Alf is semi-caught in a great deal of rerun-ness. Yeah. And it is the coolest alien show ever. So,
well, I don't know about that.
Hey, forget about it.
It's
forget
fun.
About it.
Doesn't he eat cats?
Yes, he eats cats.
He eats cats. That would be awesome.
What's his line?
And
his line is, no problem.
No problem. If they did it, but the only problem with that is they'd have a CGI Alf, which would be awful, awesome.
No
awful.
Way. It would have
they
to
need
be
to have
it would have to be Jim Henson quality Alf.
No, it would need to be the puppet. I don't even
yeah,
want
no,
to
a puppet. Yeah, like a Muppet Alf.
Yeah, but no, I'm not talking about like the Vogons from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where it's all intricate and that sort of thing. I just want it to be a hand puppet, and then have all these awesome effects around it.
Well, I mean, it was very similar to the Muppet and puppet stuff of the 1980s, which
oh yeah,
I would say yes, bring Elf back just like that.
I really think
they should just do a new Elf TV show. Like, why not?
They probably will.
I like it.
The next one is The Greatest American Hero. Again, you know what this is? Are you aware of The Greatest American Hero?
No.
I feel like I'm talking to Meryl Barr from The Idiot Boxers.
I didn't watch TV back then. I was like 4.
This one starred William Catt and Robert Culp. And William Catt played a high school teacher who finds a super suit left by aliens, and he can put it on and he can fly and do all these superpowers with it, but only with the suit on. And it was him just bumbling through this. It was a great show. It ran for, I think, like 5 seasons. They're on Netflix Instant if you want to watch it. But it was a great I mean, William Catt with his big sort of white man's afro. I don't know how else to say it, man, because he had this big mop of hair.
You can say white man's afro.
White man in afro, and it was totally goofy and silly, but it was a lot of fun. I loved Greatest American, and that has the most awesome theme song ever. Believe it or not, I'm walking on.
Yes, the song that was later used by George Costanza for a voicemail message on Seinfeld.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
What's your next one?
Fraggle Rock. Because I like, apparently, because I was a child in the 80s.
You knocked off MacGyver for this one.
Yeah, no, it? MacGyver can suck it. MacGruber, we already had a MacGyver movie. It was called.
There is going to be a MacGyver movie.
It was called MacGruber, and it didn't do very well, even though
well,
it was hilarious.
Well, there was a lot less oral sex in MacGyver.
You never know. That celery joke, I'm pretty sure, was from MacGyver.
I'm sure that MacGyver did not have as much vegetables in his butt.
But I will tell you this. I think that a Fraggle Rock movie is going to happen in the near future, because at the end of next year, they're coming out with a new Muppet movie, Jason Segel and Nick Stoller.
Is it going to be about Dracula?
No, I don't think so, but it's going to be a Muppet movie, and I really feel like the Muppets, you got Muppets coming back, you got Smurfs coming back, Fraggle Rock is on that list.
The A-Team coming back.
You got the A-Team coming back. I mean, who does Carnage like the Smurfs and the A-Team?
Exactly.
Especially in that team-up show they did. It was really great. Anyway.
Oh, that would be so awesome! Oh my god, I would watch the hell out of that.
This the Smurfs version of the A-Team, where it's the A-Team, but it's Smurfs.
That'd be like Brady Smurf could walk in and go, I don't think this, and they could blow him up.
Nice. Awesome. Okay.
Jessica Biel as Smurfette.
But Fraggle Rock, I feel, is a fantastic show that needs to come back. I just really want it back. I really,
okay,
you know, watching it on DVD.
Do you have no pragmatic reason? You just,
nope,
you're just demanding.
I got nothing. There is no real reason for the Fraggle Rock movie except for the fact that I would like to see that.
It would appease Neil Miller.
Yeah, it would give me something to do that isn't having to sit through The Karate Kid this weekend. So
yes, that's true.
Anyway,
my one, I had to put this on because it's awesome, and that would be Manimal. Manimal. Are you aware of Manimal? I made you watch a little teaser on YouTube.
You had I'm aware of it now.
It was on for like 2 months in the early 80s, like 84, 83, 84. And it starred Simon McCorkindale as a guy who could change into any animal ever, but you only saw him change into a leopard or a hawk. Because that was the only budget they had. They had these, and what it would be like, it was one of these things where they'd be like, oh my gosh, the car's going to go off the cliff. He's like, let me turn into the hawk. And then they have this 18-minute sequence of him turning into the hawk so he can then fly and save the car that would have fallen off the cliff like ages ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was an awful show, but it was a great idea. And it was just, it was the biggest pooch screwing of a TV show idea ever. And Brandon Tartikoff greenlit it for NBC, and it was awesome.
Okay.
6 episodes, man. Manimal.
Anyway, moving on. Two honorable mentions. One is Perfect Strangers, because anything with Bronson Pinchot is worth doing again. And yes. Mr. Belvedere, for some reason that, well, I mean, obviously Mr. Belvedere is awesome, but you have a story or something that I believe?
Yeah, I was watching American Dad, and Roger the Alien made a comment about Mr. Belvedering himself, mm-hmm. and he goes, well, I have to do this, so you have to go clean me up, because I just Mr. Belvedered myself. Google it. So I Googled it, and there actually is a Urban Dictionary term of Mr. Belvedering yourself, and that means releasing some sort of fluid that would require you to be cleaned up, because Mr. Belvedere was the housekeeper, you know.
I don't ever remember him like cleaning people.
Well, talk to the people at Urban Dictionary, because you know, like if you have a rag,
I just sponge bathed myself.
Well, usually it's you just crapped your pants, so you need to be cleaned up.
Mr. Belvedere means I pooped myself.
I pooped myself, but you can also there was an alternate term that let's just say after a moment of passion, if you have a towel nearby to wipe up any spillage, we'll say.
Uh huh.
With or without somebody else, I would imagine. It could go either way.
I suppose.
That towel can be called Mr. Belvedere.
Dude, you're ruining my memories of Mr. Belvedere with this. Mr. Belvedere Brock-tuned. Is a national treasure.
Have you ever seen...
You will not sully his good name. So I said good day, sir.
Are you aware of Brock-tune, Mr. Belvedere?
No.
Brock-tune. That was on a... there was a old Saturday Night Live episode with, I think it was Tom Hanks, where they wanted to, it was the Mr. Belvedere fan club, and it's a very funny sketch. I'll have to find it. I'm not going to explain it here, because you have to be there.
The Lord.
All right, so we got to go to a break.
And we are wrapping you up on this episode of Fat Guys at the Movies. We're so happy that you decided to join us this weekend, because yes. We talked at length about Kevin's issues with cornrows and my love for Charlton Copley, mm-hmm. and Mr. Belvedere, and what sort of slang term.
My apologies to anybody who... of the listening audience who does have cornrows. I'm sure you look beautiful.
Yeah. So there's that. Anyway, what's next? Oh, it's time to do the world famous DVD roundup. I don't really know what that was.
I have no idea.
I have a few.
It happened. Okay.
This week, I have a few interesting Blu-ray picks and DVD, and one awesome DVD pick that is... relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we have. We have Caddyshack on Blu-ray for the first time. Looks wonderful on Blu-ray. There is also a documentary on the Blu-ray that has never been released before that I found very fascinating.
This is the whole 30th anniversary thing, right?
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, the Blu-ray is not incredible. There's not a lot of other... I don't think there's any other features. It's just the documentary.
I think that's it. It's just the documentary, both that and the DVD.
But I would say this. The movie looks great. It's very colorful in ways that it has never looked before. Then Shutter Island, I thought, is decent. Shutter Island's definitely worth a rent. It's out this week. It's a good-looking movie. It's just, you know, Marty Scorsese has told better stories in his day.
Marty. We call him Marty on the show.
Yeah. And then From Paris with Love.
It's better than calling him Mr. Belvedere.
Wow. Because that would, at this point, insinuate other things. From Paris with Love, which to the point that I saw A-Team, was my favorite action movie of the year.
I enjoyed From Paris with Love.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And John Travolta, when John Travolta checks into the Crazy Town Motel, he's awesome.
He becomes the mayor of Crazy Town.
Right. So that's great. And then the A-Team full series box set is out this week, and it comes in a van.
Down by the river.
It has, I mean, the DVDs are assembled in B.A. Baracus's van, and isn't, that's the coolest thing ever.
Isn't there a picture? Isn't there a picture of B.A. Baracus smiling in the van?
Yes.
Yeah, he's actually smiling though, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's happy to be in the van.
That's right, because that's his van.
So
he doesn't have to fly.
So yeah. So there's that.
Here's mine. I have to say, Nip/Tuck season 6, which is the final season. I'm actually kind of glad they ended Nip/Tuck because it was just getting redonkulous, some of the storylines and plastic surgery they had to do. But it's a guilty pleasure. It's a fun show. And the only problem with ending it is when you have a show like that where the characters are all wretched people, you know, you can't like make it too happy for them because you don't really want to see them as happy people. But it's fun. Season 6 is good. The Charlie Chan collection from TCM, from Warner Brothers. This one, there's four, I believe, three or four Charlie Chan movies. I watched them. They're like 90, I mean, not even 90, they're like 65 minutes long, mm-hmm. these movies from the 40s. And it's fascinating because about as racially sensitive or culturally sensitive as calling the Karate Kid, is having white people play Charlie Chan. In these movies, they're fun. They're completely offensive, but they're kind of neat to watch. You know, anybody who says, "Oh, they just are doing nothing but remakes and sequels now," they made 40 some Charlie Chan movies before 1950. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they do this all the time. Starstruck, which is a Disney Channel original movie about Miley Cyrus as a guy, apparently. Well, it's not Miley Cyrus, but it's a guy version of Miley Cyrus. Also, Family Matters, season 1, with Urkel all over the box, doesn't show up until episode 12. And the series, it's not that good until Urkel shows up. It's actually really crappy. But then Urkel saves the day and revitalizes the series. And then The Illusionist on Blu-ray.
Okay.
Which is a neat movie. And they've got some extra stuff on the Blu-ray, some interesting special features that they don't have on the original DVD release. And this was the dueling magician movie between this and The Prestige a couple years ago.
Right, and it lost.
Well, they both did well.
But it does have Jessica Biel in it, so there you go.
She's hot.
Speaking of Jessica Biel, go see the A-Team this week.
Yeah,
The Stinker. Rapid.
Oh, The Stinker, yes.
This is a good stinker because I watched this movie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was bad.
Do you want me to say the title or do you want to say the title?
No, you go ahead. I don't even want to think about the title.
The 41-year-old virgin who knocked up Sarah Marshall and felt super bad about it.
Here's the one credit I will give to this movie is that at least they stuck to one type of film to parody. They just... Yeah. Did not get the humor. And the guy who did Seth Rogen, though, he does a pretty good Seth Rogen.
I've heard that, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, isn't this like the Juice in the Hoods movie that the Keenan and I, you know?
Bad. I mean, it's bad. The jokes are terrible. It falls flat. The people in it are not funny.
Mm.
And that's a problem. So there you go. So time to wrap up our reviews this week. You saw Karate Kid and said...
It sucks, but it'll probably be funny.
And then we both said the A-Team rocks.
Yeah.
Because that's awesome and good, and that's what it is. Next week, we got a duo of interesting movies. We got Jonah Hex, and we have Toy Story 3
Boom.
In 3D. So in the meantime, direct all your friends at fatguysandmovies.com so they can listen to us as well. From now until then, go out and see some movies.
Until the end of time.
Till the break of dawn.
Manimal. Manimal.